Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care. Working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Join us on Monday evening, U.S. Eastern Time, as we explore homeopathy and facial analysis, a show co-hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Brooks and Grant Bentley, homeopath and naturopath. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your questions. Let's go!
End of our intro music. Hi, I'm Debbie Brooks, founder of Homeopathy World Community, speaking with our marvelous, wonderful co-host, Grant Bentley, Australian homeopath, naturopath, specialist in the facial analysis method, which we absolutely must learn in order to make our lives a little bit easier. Today is April 16th, 2012. We have been learning all about the dynamism of homeopathy, and we're going to continue to learn about the laws of attraction and the similimum, how homeopathy works, and we're going to be talking about chronic disease, energy, and universal forces. Grant Bentley is the principal, founder, and senior lecturer of the Victorian College of Classical Homeopathy, Homeopathic Facial Analysis Research in Melbourne, Australia. And we're going to hold on to our seats every week.
Are you hearing? Hi, Debbie. Thanks for the big build-up.
Yeah, because I'm always excited to hear what you're going to teach us and what you're going to say and how I'm going to argue with you or have a conversation.
Hopefully there won't be too much argument.
Or how I'm going to agree with you constantly.
Look, that's fine. If you've got any points of disagreement, please feel free. That's fine. I mean, there's nothing wrong with healthy debate or a bit of toing and froing. I mean, that's absolutely fine. Last week we were speaking about understanding that homeopathy works in a couple of ways in the treatment of chronic disease. We were talking about how it has that repellent action, which is one universal force. There are a number of them that homeopathy utilises, but the laws, the similimum, which is the similimum and the repulsion of the stronger similimum against the weaker, of course, is the basis of how all homeopathic medicines work. If that wasn't a natural law, then homeopathy wouldn't work at all. So, but of course, when we understand attraction and repulsion and all sorts of the other laws that are around, we understand that there is more than one law. At the very basis, we have a minimum of three, because we have there is attraction and repulsion, and we also have the idea that there's fusion. This is how particles become atoms, and atoms become molecules, and molecules become compounds, and so on. So they are using those three basic fundamental laws of the universe to create all life, both organic life and, of course, inorganic substances. So those three forces of fusion, attraction, and repulsion are all part of this whirlwind, these swirling ebbs and flows and eddies and all sorts of things that are going on all around us that are creating. They're the laws and the forces that are the underpinning of the building blocks. They're the building blocks of everything in the material universe, but of course they're more than that. They underpin the building blocks of the universe. And everything works, inorganic and organic, in accordance to these laws. Now, once we understand that, we can begin to see, I mean, we've been scratching our heads for a couple of hundred years trying to work out how homeopathy works, for goodness sake. I mean, the similar disease repels a weaker disease, and so therefore, you know, if someone's got a fever, give them a bigger fever. And, you know, you hear all sorts of things, but essentially it's just coming back to what is a natural force going on all around us. It's not where the confusion is on how homeopathy works in regards to the similimen is by adding in the word disease. If you just added in that there is a similar charge repels another similar charge, and the one that stays put is the one that's stronger, then it's not that hard to understand. We see it happening all around us. We turn lights on. We fly rockets to the moon. They are all using these same forces of nature. And what we're saying is that homeopathy just utilizes these same forces of nature. It's just that the way that we explain it sounds a little confusing. Because after all, how can one disease that's even worse than the disease we're trying to eradicate leave a person symptom-free? You know, the question becomes, well, wouldn't that make them worse? If you've got a mild fever but then give them a drug that's going to create a worse fever, then why don't they end up with a worse fever? And that's a very, very logical question when you think about it. And then it's put like that, the answer is, well, they should. They should end up with a worse fever. But it's because we're supplementing the idea of disease or fever rather than just understanding what it is. I mean, if you go up to a person and you say, if you try and stick the same end of a magnet together, what happens? Everyone knows the answer. If you turn around and you say to anyone that's just done basic chemistry or physics and you say if two protons are forced into a confined space, what ends up happening if there's no neutron there to buffer?
And, what happens?
You
what
know,
happens?
You know, yeah. But, well, they repel each other. That's
okay.
Why you need neutrons. So when you're in... When
you,
you're
need
in
a,
neutron,
you need a mediator in the middle of this conflict.
That's right. So what ends up happening is that this is where your supernovas and all this become really important, because what would happen is that protons would just go on being protons and electrons would just go on being electrons and the opposite charge will attract each other, so you'll end up with a universe of hydrogen but nothing much else. And so what happens is when a star collapses, then all of these protons and neutrons, protons and electrons, which convert into neutrons under pressure, then what ends up happening is that when a star is collapsing in on itself, it creates a small area of such density that these protons and neutrons are forced together into a very, very small confined space. And so now your elements begin. And so all the elements up until iron also are all formed in this one pressure cooker environment. And so what you have is that the two protons forced into a nucleus, for example, will either repel each other or one of them will turn into a neutron. And so this is where the whole process begins, because one turns into a neutron, the proton then attracts an electron, that electron, because of its negative charge, attracts a positive charge, which is another proton, but because that proton is separated by the neutron, then it can now join in this confined space. And look, essentially, that's how everything begins to build. And so what we have, it's before I start rolling around and spinning, let's just get off that, because I know that sometimes that can be not the greatest subject. But what is important?
Well,
for
I wonder. This is kind of a question I had in my mind. As a homeopath, as a physician, as a healer, do we need to study chemistry? Is this important for us to learn this basic information about the behavior of the particles in the universe?
I think you need to understand, as a homeopath, the laws that underpin it, because essentially that's what homeopathy is doing. Homeopathy, I guess what Hahnemann has done, which is different to chemistry, is that he has bypassed all of the downstream molecular ramifications of all of these laws at work. So what happens, as we were saying, is that the moment that you get some neutrons into a nucleus, well, then now you've got an overall positive charge. So then an electron is attracted, because that's the law of attraction. We're talking about the law of repulsion with similimum, but don't forget that there is also a law of attraction. And so that overall positive charge attracts a negative charge, and then that negative charge attracts a positive charge. And because now it's unstable, another neutron is formed. And this is how balance... So we need to understand what the basic underpinning laws are, and they are this.
I think learning this way, there is what I would say is an inner intuitive recognition of these facts as true. And then we can be more confident in what we're doing and what we're practicing and how it works, because we have this foundation of understanding, and it becomes part of us, part of our language,
well,
part of our understanding.
We're not segregated into being a loopy fringe that has no basis in science at all. If we understand what it is that we're dealing with, then you understand that these things are happening all around us. I mean, it's the basis of not only of physics and chemistry, but of all engineering. It's how it works. So when the way that homeopathic terminology is being described, it puts us on the outer. That is, a stronger disease repelling a weaker disease, and then an infinitesimal dose. And as one person on a skeptic show that I saw one time, he said that homeopaths are trying to make us believe that the less whiskey we drink, the more drunk we get. And and I can understand how they think that way, because what we're saying is that the more dilute, the stronger it is. But these are all, there's a philosopher, in the golden age of philosophy in the Victorian age, called Wittgenstein, and he used to say that there are no fundamental problems with science, there's only linguistic problems. And that is, we're trying to say the same thing. While we're talking about sayings, it's a bit like someone told, there's an old saying about sociology, and sociology is saying what everybody already knows in words that nobody can understand.
Uh-huh.
And it's a little like that's what homeopaths are doing in a way. We're saying the very basics that we learn in Physics 101, but because of the terminology that we're saying it in, no one understands what it is we're saying, including us. It's like there's this great big steep metaphysical learning curve, when in fact there's none at all. The simple fact of the matter is this. The laws of the universe are attraction, repulsion, and fusion. If that wasn't so, nothing would build. Mm-hmm. So we know that they exist. And all that I'm going to tell you is that attraction, repulsion, and fusion is exactly the same as saurophytosis and syphilis. It's exactly the same. Except that we're just using different terminology. So we've got into saying what everybody already knows in words that nobody understands. It's the linguistics of homeopathy that is leading it down the garden path and keeping it on the fringe, so to speak.
Well, it sounds like... I'm sorry. Am I allowed to
pop
in there? Well, it sounds like taking the basic laws of physics and chemistry and the way that the universe is built and over making a transparent layer over medicine, how people get sick, how disease works, how their health is destroyed or healed or built better, based on the exact same fundamental principles, but we can apply that to everything in the universe. So the sociologist will apply it in their way, in their pig Latin, and the homeopath will apply it in their vernacular. And so each group is talking the same thing, but in their own language.
Yes, that's right. And while we speak in a language that no one understands, we'll never be understood. And it's as simple as that. Let's just move to an example of what I'm saying. So what we have is, let's just take the basic similimum, which is the law of repulsion. So we know that there are forces that push away. We know that there are forces that bring towards, this is kind of like gravity, any sort of what we will call inward motion. So or attraction, that's the other way of that you can call it. But either way, it brings things towards you. So some repel away, some bring towards us, and others, when you talk about this fusion or adhesion, what we're looking at there is an accumulation. It's things being caught up in a kind of a cosmic web. And this is how neutrons, this is the job that neutrons do, and then molecules are then made into compounds and so on. So the roles of this fusion, repulsion, and attraction, which we see all the time, which is what's happening with the magnets and happening with the protons and so on and so forth, we see these in our remedies. So let's take the one that is the most obvious to homeopathy, which is the similimum. The law of the similimum works on the laws or the force, the universal force of repulsion. So repulsion is about expelling things from the body. Now, what I'm saying here is that if we have a look at our materia medica, we will begin to see that not only people, but also remedies, everything in the universe, because remember, protons, neutrons, and electrons, there is nothing organic or inorganic that isn't made up of them. So whatever laws govern them, govern us. That's the way it goes. And so what we have here is that by understanding that there can be a union of these laws or a dominance of one of these laws, when we begin to look at both patients or remedies, we begin to see a picture forming of what force is dominant inside that person or inside that remedy. If we stay with the law of repulsion, in homeopathic terms, we call that a centrifugal action, meaning that it is a force that pushes from the center to the circumference. Now, of course, in homeopathic words, what I'm talking about here is sora. So when you look at the soric remedies, I understand in a more contemporary world, what we're doing is that we are trying to look for the underpinning psychology of it, because we realize that there's got to be something that unites soric remedies. Now, Hahnemann did not do a great job at explaining these miasms and miasmatic categories. And this is why there are more miasms than there are homeopaths practicing at the current time. Because people are taking Hahnemann at his word and saying, okay, well, look, this is an underpinning knowledge that we have to understand for the treatment of chronic disease. But because Hahnemann has not done a good job at being able to say what that underpinning knowledge is, we're trying to develop it. Well, all I can do is give you my take on it. I know that we have post-Kentian homeopathic world has gone down the pathway of trying to understand the uniting psychology that makes soric remedies sora. syphilitic remedies that make syphilitic remedies syphilis. So the Hahnemannian concept is that it's all about ulceration and degeneration if you're talking about syphilis. But when you look at sulfur as a remedy, which is known and labelled by Hahnemann himself as the prince of antisulfurics, then what we see in the proving of sulfur is that we see suicidal depression, we see alcoholism, we see ulceration, we see degeneration of the bones, we see all sorts of wasting. So what we do is that we scratch our head and we say, well, but hang on a minute, that's meant to be syphilitic. And yet Hahnemann's saying that this is the prince of the Soric remedy. How can this be? And so what ended up developing was this concept, this post-Hahnemannian concept that, well, that must be the syphilitic element of the Soric remedy or the syphilitic stage of the Soric remedy, which would mean that sulfur would never be used for those very conditions that the proving said that it could do, because modern homeopaths would say, well, that person doesn't need sulfur because they're alcoholic, they're suicidal, their bones are brittle, and they've got ulcers all over their skin. So they're clearly syphilitic, and their Soric remedy like sulfur is the last thing they need. And so what I'm saying to you is, if that's the case, why did it come out in the proving? That's what the simillimum is about. The simillimum is about, or the provings is meant to be showing us that in fact sulfur would be indicated in exactly that sort of case. So here, this creates enormous confusion. Well, if that's Soric, then what's syphilitic? And on and round the mulberry bush we go. And there's never really been an answer. So what we're modern homeopaths are trying to do is that they're trying to unite each one of the miasmatic groups by an underpinning psychology or character. But here is where I want to give my take on this and go right back to the basic universal forces. We know through repulsion, attraction, fusion, we know that all of these forces exist, and they will either, because the strongest simillimum repels the weaker, that's what, right, we know that through physics, but let's forget about physics, let's just go back to Hahnemann. We know that Hahnemann says that the strongest simillimum repels the weaker, that's the basis of how homeopathy works. But we also know that when it comes to non-similimens, meaning he used the terminology dissimilar disease, if that's too confusing, just do an opposite energy. Attraction is opposite to repulsion. Fusion is opposite to both attraction and repulsion, and so on. So if it's easier to understand it in that way, then think of it in that way. But what we have here is that two dissimilar forces or energies, one will either dominate the other, or if they're of equal strength, they'll join. This is why you get psoriasis, syphilis, making tubercular. So you've got all of these different forces flying around the universe, underpinning all the particles which underpin all organic and inorganic life, meaning that we are either going to be a unison of one of those forces or dominant in one of those forces. That's what the organon says. And we find exactly those same things in remedies. So when we look at a remedy like sulfur, what we're looking at is its overall action, not the pathology that it can produce, okay? This is very important to try and get your head around this. It is not the pathology that the remedy produces, but its overall action that discerns its quality. It's exactly the same with human beings. It's not necessarily the individual actions or things that we do and say throughout a day that defines our underlying personality. Those actions, whether we go to work, drive in a car, get upset, get you know, don't get upset and become more temperate or placid. These are defining moments. They're just simple actions throughout the day, but they don't necessarily, taken singly, define the essence of our character or personality. Now, when we're talking about remedies and the remedies action, meaning the universal force that is dominant inside that remedy, we are not talking about the different little bits of pathology that it may or may not create. We are talking about its overall action. And this is why Hahnemann called sulfur the prince of antisorics, even though it creates alcoholism, degenerates the bones, creates leg ulcers, gangrene, insanity, all these other syphilitic things. The simple fact of the matter is that sulfur's overall dominant action is a repellent force, what he called centrifugal force. It pushes out from the center to the circumference, and that is what its overall character is. And that's what unites the soric remedy. Not necessarily a personality, and certainly not a pathology. I know that the pathologies themselves, degeneration, inflammation, and the hypo and dysfunctional sort of stuff. I know that traditionally this is what the miasms are characterized and labeled. But it began very early. There were chinks in that armor. Bonninghausen himself, who is Hahnemann's greatest, not only friend, but fan, Bonninghausen himself writes about Hahnemann's theory. Look, I think it's right, but at the same time, pathology can't be the way that we are going to go about this. In fact, he writes that pathology is a poor indicator of the underlying miasm. And the reason that he's saying this is because it doesn't matter what remedy that you look at, it has areas that belong to supposedly the demarcation of another miasm. For example, if you look at, say, I don't know, Baryta carbon and aurum are both three underworts in inflammation, a supposedly psychotic area. So what we've done is that we've gone back to this really simplistic answer of saying, oh, well, that's the psychotic part of that syphilitic remedy. And so in the end, and this I write about this in Appearance and Circumstance, the first book, in the end what we have is a system that talks about how all remedies are all miasms and all people are all miasms. And so in the end, what do you have? You end up with nothing. You can't, there's no demarcation line. There's no use having it at all if everything belongs to everything and anyone can take anything. So then we should be able to just go into our pharmacy and pick any darn remedy off the shelf that's repertorized up well and that should work, but that's not the case. What is the case is there are only going to be certain remedies that work. If we know that our patient is dominant in what I will just call outward motion, you could call it repellent motion, you can call it anything you want to, as long as we understand what it is that we're talking about. Repellent motion is sora. So if I have a patient that is soric, meaning that it is dominant, they are dominant in that repelling motion, then I must have a remedy that is also got that centrifugal or repelling motion as its dominant universal force. Otherwise, what I'll be doing is this. Now, we know that somebody can come into our clinic and we can do a repertorization and sulfur can be number one or mercury can be number one, or let's just say mercury, thuya and sulfur are all up there because they have everything that our patient has been complaining of in the repertorization. That's very, very common. It happens all the time. But which one do we choose? Well, this is where the HFA process and just understanding this underpinning laws becomes absolutely vital, because the defense system of our patient is working in a centrifugal way. If I give Fuya or mercury, I am giving a remedy that will probably be accepted because the repertorization has shown that it's a relative, at least disease similimum, but the underpinning force of those remedies is going to be telling the defense system and immune system of my patient, giving it an entirely different set of instructions. So if I give Fuya to this patient, this remedy that I'm giving the patient is saying to their defense system, I want you to encapsulate, because it's fusing energy, it's joining energy. Because this Fuya is dominant in that energy, that is what it's going to be telling this patient's immune system to do. I want you to create inflammation. I want you to encapsulate the invading stress or virus or bacteria. But this patient's immune system is saying, but that's not how I am programmed to work. I'm programmed to work in a centrifugal way. And so, therefore, the Fuya does not work, or worse, even causes aggravations. Now, we know this when the well-repertorized remedy fails to relieve or causes an aggravation. How common is this throughout our history books? It's only about on every paragraph. And the reason for this is that, yes, it repertorized up well, but no, it's not the similimum, because its underpinning force is not the same as the patient. Through HFA, what I can do is that I can understand the underpinning force that that patient has. And what that underpinning force means is that that is the program that nature has given the defense system of that patient, and it will not operate in any other way but that way. And so unless I come in with a remedy that is going to be a similimum to the way that that person fights stress or disease, then all I'm going to do is impinge its process. And so only when Hahnemann talks about how if we understand the miasm, then we get this true, deeper similimum, he's not talking about a psychology and he's not talking about a pathology. He's talking about understanding that sulfur has a centrifugal action, but so too does the patient. And when we match up the fact that this patient is got this because they're sorry, we can tell that from their facial features, because we know that they are dominant in this, their way, the way that their defense system fights is by repelling things out of the body, then all I need to do is find a well-repertorized centrifugal acting remedy. And now you've got a similimum both on the repertory and you've got a similimum at that miasmatic level. And that's how HFA works.
I am here. I'm
okay.
I'm here.
I haven't put you to sleep.
No, I have been listening intently because it's a lot to take in. And I put myself on mute for a bit, and I'm going to check in the chat. We have a dozen or so people listening, and I'm wondering if anybody has a comment or a question, if they're hanging on every word, if they have been able to keep up with you and understand the points that you're making. Because it does seem crystal clear, a matter of being able to apply it and learn how to use this information. That means actually going into a study class and getting educated and knowing how to use these tools. So,
if anyone does have any questions, they can post them or just send them to you. I've got a patient now, so I have to go. But
okay.
But if they want to, then please feel free. But I guess the baseline of what I'm trying to say today is that when we need this to move on, is that it's about understanding that there is a force behind the way we defend ourselves mm-hmm. and the way that remedies are made. Each one has its own kind of, it's dominant in a particular force. So as a result of that, and this force is just another word for energy. You can call it energy. You can call it anything you want. Or you can call it emotion, an energy, a force, or whatever. But what we're talking about here, if we're going to go any further with this whole HSA philosophy, is about understanding that what underpins it is not a psychology and it's not a pathology. It's about understanding that the homeopathic remedies are a particular type of energy, and so too are we. And the similimum is matching one to the other. Okay? So what I'll do is I'll leave it there, and then we'll talk about that perhaps a little bit more next week.
That sounds good. I will schedule our regular Monday evening for the 30 minutes. People can get on, people can share, bring your friends, discuss this over a cup of coffee, whatever you like. But get in there and let's get our minds thinking. You can close and go to your clinic, and I will finish up the last few minutes if you wish. And I want to thank
you. I will do that, and thanks a lot, Debbie, and thanks to everyone listening.
Thank you. So let the force be with you. And for those who are still on here on the show, on the chat, and listening to today's talk, I want to let you know that we also have a Monday morning show. We had April 16th, the last day of World Homeopathy Awareness Week, and we had a special live video. If you go to the front page of Homeopathy World Community, there is a banner to our video shows called Health In. And we're just at the beginning. We've had about four shows, and we're learning how to create an engaging, entertaining, interactive type of a show where you can not only chat and comment while we're on live, you can call into the number and talk and look at us, and we're going to try and have some more guests, entertaining guests each week, about pertinent topics that people want to learn about, whether it is infertility, diabetes, heart disease, whether you, I heard on, my daughter-in-law sent me a piece of information about coffee, that coffee helps women in particular alleviate any kind of depression, that they are happier. And when the person spoke, he was telling us that a woman should be drinking 4 or 5 cups of coffee a day. And I'm thinking to myself, wow, what would Hahnemann say? In the fact of all of his aphorisms, he lists that we should not be taking certain substances and that they are drugs and they will affect us. And to me, my reaction to that kind of a news article, supposedly by scientists and a study, is telling me they're trying to sell more coffee. And that was my reaction, although other people are going to use it as a rationalization, an excuse, a reason why they should fill up their cup of coffee more than one time a day, and who knows what they're putting in, whether it's sugar, tons of sugars, tons of artificial sweeteners, creamers. That little cup of coffee is going to turn out to be affecting their pancreas, their cholesterol level, and so on. And these things we need to take with a grain of salt. When we hear news articles, we have to be discerning and thinking on our own about what all of this information being given to us means in our own personal life. And so we would like for you to send us ideas. Do you have a particular person who you would like to hear speak? Do you have questions to ask that person? Do they have a particularly life learning story that you feel other people would want to hear? Let us know about that, because we want to get them onto the show, especially if it would be engaging, if it would be helpful to many people. And as we do that, we have a Dr. Deepak Sharma from New Delhi, India, as my co-host. And he runs 7 clinics. I don't think he gets home until 11 to midnight every night, and he starts out really early in the day. I am learning just how hard these homeopaths have to get through a very, very long day. I really don't even know how they get to take a break to eat and see their family. But those are questions that we would like to ask. What is it like to be a homeopath in India, a homeopath in England, a homeopath in the Netherlands or in Malaysia? Get on and tell us your story. Let us know about your successes. Has homeopathy worked for you? Did you have a case that you used a homeopathic remedy and it was startlingly quick acting? Because some people think that these homeopathic drug remedies take a very long time to work. So let's talk about the myths of homeopathy. Let's talk about how we're using it in our lives. Let's have a conversation together and really get this going and invite as many people as you possibly can. They don't have to be homeopaths. They can be in other health professions, or they can be just the regular person walking down the street who's looking for an answer to their problem, to their suffering, to their pain. Hahnemann would be engaging to them. Hahnemann was very compassionate, the founder of the practice of medicine of homeopathy. I see people are still listening to me. We have just a couple of minutes. You can contact me at homeopathyworldcommunity@gmail.com. If you're on Homeopathy World Community, I encourage you to write some blogs. Tell us what you're doing in your clinic. If you have learned something new, let us know what it is. Let's have a discussion. It's about connecting. And I don't know what Grant would say about me. I'm a pretty shy person, believe it or not. I've been shy my whole life. But all of a sudden, I'm extremely passionate about homeopathy. Somebody has got to take a stand and just let other people know. Because if you have a belief system, if you believe that something is working for you or your family, then you want to help other people. That is really what we're here for. We're here to share. We're here to learn from each other. We're here to communicate and have this conversation. Otherwise, it's going to be so quiet that it's not going to be able to grow this information and create what I call our motto, waves of awareness. Waves of awareness means that there are folks out there who are in some type of pain, and we want to alleviate their suffering. We want to help them with their pain. We want to find solutions. And that is why you love homeopathy. And you might like Reiki and acupressure and acupuncture and heat therapy and going for walks and breath work and all these other things. Hahnemann loves them too. I mean, he would be for anything that is going to be naturally healing, something that's going to work in alignment with the body, with nature, with the fundamental principles that Grant is teaching us every single week. We only have a few seconds left, so I am going to say thank you for all of our listeners, and I'm going to find our exit and see you on Thursday. We will have Alan Phillips will be doing the show. We're not going to have a show on Wednesday morning or Thursday because I'm going to be at the National Center for Homeopathy Conference. But we will be back next Monday night with Debbie Brooke. Okay, take care, everyone.
Thank you for listening to Homeopathy and Facial Analysis on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio with homeopaths Debbie Brooke and Grant Bentley. We encourage you to follow our show. Click the reminder button to receive email notices when shows air. Share with friends on Facebook and MySpace, and also Twitter. We welcome your comments and questions. See you next time.